Sports Radio 92.9 and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you, starting hour number two of the show. It's already flown by. The first hour has going until 7 o'clock this evening, when we'll turn things over to LSU and Texas A&M. Give me a follow on social media if you would like. I say interesting things every once in a while amongst a bunch of random ramblings, I guess you could call it. ATL Johnson 18 on social media. Of course, as always, follow the radio station at 929 The Game. Interesting situation happening in Columbia, Missouri right now. I guess no. They're in Tuscaloosa this week, between the Crimson Tide and the Missouri Tigers. As like I said earlier, it's, can the world handle a situation in which Alabama loses three games in the regular season? Well, it's feeling like that is going to start heading in the unlikely type of territory. And I say that, and it's really sad, because Alabama is only up 6-0 right now in the second quarter. However, Brady Cook, Missouri's quarterback, came into this game as doubtful because he's got like a pretty bad ankle injury. Apparently that has flared up. Brady Cook out of the game currently. His backup, Drew Pine, came in. First pass, Pine threw, interception. And it was a bad one. And so, yeah, you feel like this is another SEC game in which if they got no quarterback, I mean, they don't stand a chance. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I got some friends of mine who are Missouri Tiger fans, and so also, I have some family that are Alabama fans, and I love to root against. I'm just one of those contrarian type people. And I'm in the perfect place to do that, right? Being in the state of Georgia. But yeah, interesting. And I'll keep you updated amongst what's going on in the college football landscape. We'll do a college football catch-up at the bottom of the hour coming up. And we'll say about 15 minutes from now, going to talk to my friend David Shealy, who works for the 10 Tampa Bay News down in Tampa, about this Falcons-Bucks series. However, right now, I want to get into a Check the Tape segment, where we listen to some audio from recent days, see what people are saying. And we're going to start with the World Series, because as we talked about earlier, I mean, last night, look, if you're going to care about Major League Baseball, it does not get any better than what we saw last night, game one of the World Series. Juggernaut against juggernaut, at least from the standpoint of legacy. And it feels like the Dodgers and Yankees have been fighting to be able to carry that legacy type of banner in Major League Baseball. Been 15 years for the Yankees. You could say, oh, it's only been 4 for the Dodgers, but we know what everyone thinks about anyone who won a championship in the year 2020. Usually Mickey Mouse is used when discussing those championships. Whether they're legitimate, that's a debate for a whole another day, but it feels like for certain that these are two teams fighting for legacy, and especially as Major League Baseball is, you know, trying to get all of the eyeballs that they can, what better than game one, things going into extra innings, and you have a walk-off grand slam from Freddie Freeman, a guy who, coming into the series, had the messed up ankle, really kind of limited him. Honestly, as I was preparing for this show yesterday, before the game, I typed up some notes of things that I wanted to pay attention to for this World Series game. And it was just like, all right, what is Freddie Freeman's ankle going to be like? What is the roster going to be like with Anthony Rizzo dealing with the broken finger situation, pitching matchups? How is this all going to break down? And we end up in a situation where the Yankees and Aaron Boone, while people have talked about the fact that Aaron Boone was on the opposite end of the Boston Red Sox in 2004 making a blunder when it came to pitching and leaving Pedro in too long. You've got Aaron Boone as a manager making a boneheaded decision of putting Nestor Cortez in, who hasn't pitched since September 18th, and he gives up the grand slam to Freddie Freeman, and the Dodgers have won game one, 6-3. Let's listen to Freddie Freeman talk about this moment of just the huge impact that it has, and as well as enjoying this moment with his dad.
No, again, that's stuff you are 5 years old in the backyard right there, and that's a dream come true, but that's only one. We got three more.
Just wanted to share that with him because he's been there, and he's been through a lot in his life too. That's mostly his moment, because if he didn't throw me batting practice, if he didn't love the game of baseball, I wouldn't be here, you know, playing this game. So that's Fred Freeman's moment right there.
Just a really cool moment for Freddie Freeman, who is someone that I feel like most Braves fans, I can't speak for all, but I feel like most Braves fans, even if we're not supporting the Dodgers, support Freddie Freeman. Feels like enough time has passed between the whole situation that you can have that appreciation, especially what Freddie's gone through this season with his son Maximus and the whole, you know, pretty scary situation with him being in the hospital, dealing with his different ailments. Just all of it is such a feel-good story for Freddie Freeman to be the guy, the comparison to Kirk Gibson in 81, and the fact that we're getting this whole, like, what Joe Davis did last night with that call. I mean, that's going with other legendary calls of the World Series. I feel like a lot of people wondered, hey, we're another year without Joe Buck calling these big moments, and Joe has done such a good job of making the moment feel really big. Would a guy like Joe Davis stepping in being able to carry that? And I honestly think, at least from what I heard, I think he's done a very good job of that, and this was just perfect. I mean, that call of that moment and throwing homage to Vin Scully with the Kirk Gibson situation, like, absolutely incredible. And so for it to be Freddie in this moment, for him to go after and to just through the netting, be able to you know, kind of lock hands with his dad and enjoy it, I think just really cool. And it's interesting how to feel about this as a Braves fan, because I'll be honest, I don't want the Dodgers to win. I hate the Dodgers. I also don't like exactly love the Yankees. I mean, you know, kind of some history going back a little bit before my time. I was still born, but before my time of being able to enjoy the sport, to make me not love the Yankees. And so this is a weird one, but as far as an individual moment, really cool thing to see, loved what happened for Freddie Freeman last night, and loved what it did for Major League Baseball in making the moment really big and hopefully bring some eyeballs in for game two tonight. I was trying to look to see who we're getting as far as pitching matchups for tonight. It's looked like Carlos Rondon versus Yoshinobu Yamamoto. So that'll be an interesting one tonight, 8 o'clock for Game 2 of the World Series in L.A. All right, continuing on Check the Tape, wanted to get to this clip of Jimmy Lake, Falcons defensive coordinator. He had some interesting comments this week. Apart from talking about how he wants this defense to grow and develop, and it feels like that was very interesting choice words to say, like, hey, we're probably not adding anybody big, like, we got to go with who we have. Jimmy Lake also said something interesting when it came to him being asked about the stats and the fact that, hey, it's no big secret that the Falcons aren't getting sacks, even though they went and made what they hoped to be a good move by bringing in Matthew Judon. Let's listen to what Jimmy Lake had to say about specifically the individual stats and the fact that he's not changing the Falcons' scheme.
You know, we don't look down and stare down at what a stat sheet says on how many this and how many that and how many that. At the end of the day, what we're trying to do is we're trying to win football games. And we're trying to, you know, the first thing, we're trying to outrun the South and win the South and try to secure a playoff spot. And so individual statistics and all those things, those are extracurricular stuff that's off to the side. The number one thing we're trying to do is get the ball back for our offense, make sure they score less points than our team scores, which would mean we would win at the end of the day.
At what point does it reach, not panic, but all right, we got to switch something up because this isn't working? Like if the progress stops.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. You know, I'm a glass half full guy, and we see the result. We see what the process looks like, you know, from training camp all the way up until now. And there's just not a world where I see that happening.
All right. I understand Jimmy Lake's point of we're not concerned about individual stats, because if you look and you see who's leading the NFL and sacks right now, it's the Giants, the Broncos, and then the Vikings. So two teams not very good this year, and a team that is record-wise, but we may be starting to learn, is not as good as, you know, what they've shown through the first few weeks. So I get the individual part, but individual stats bring about team results, and we've got to see more from this Atlanta Falcons defense. You can't be giving up 34 points to the Seattle Seahawks. And it's a concern. It's going to be something interesting to see on Sunday when they take on the Bucks. And that's actually a topic we're going to discuss next with David Shealy of 10 Tampa Bay. Talk about this Bucks and Falcons matchup coming up next right here on the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you live in the Kia Studios going until 7 o'clock this evening when we will turn things over to LSU and Texas A&M. Feels like the one big ranked team against ranked team, at least higher up, matchup going on today. We had another ranked, yeah, it was Navy and Notre Dame. We'll talk about all of these college football games and our college football catch-up coming up in about 17 minutes from now. However, going to go out to the waitfor.com hotline and bring in my friend, David Shealy, who works for 10 Tampa Bay WTSP down there in the Tampa area. Does an incredible job as a sports broadcaster. David, how you doing on the Saturday, man?
What's up, my friend? Good to hear from you.
Absolutely. It's fun because, and David, I don't know how much you tell the people down in Tampa. It's your business whether or not. But at least up here, I can say that David's a Falcons fan in Buccaneers territory. So he covers the Buccaneers. But at heart, the man's a Falcons fan. So it's fun to get to kind of have this type of a conversation with you of trying to figure out what we're going to see. But first, David, I have to ask you, did you see this Uncrustable story in the NFL this week?
No, I have no idea what that is.
All right, I'm so glad because I'm about to potentially blow your mind with this.
Okay.
All right, the NFL, the Athletic did the story. The Athletic revealed this week that the NFL consumes an estimated 800,000 Uncrustables sandwiches every season. All right, they have broken this down to the Denver Broncos consume 700 Uncrustables a week. The Falcons are in fifth place with 250 a week. So that for the Broncos would be about 11 per player per week, and for the Falcons that's about 4. Still seems like an incredibly high rate. Do you have anything that you're like that obsessed with when it comes to a snack? And I'm just like curious how you take the NFL being so obsessed with Uncrustables.
Well, I don't think there's anything, any snack that I consume to that level. But what I can say is, you know, for an NFL player, you know, you gotta bulk, right? So
sure.
you gotta up the calorie count, up the protein count. And so that's always a good quick hit of protein and carbs, you know, just real quick. So I'm not super surprised by that. I also, you know, have essentially confirmed that halftime adjustments are a myth. So I wouldn't be shocked to find out that Uncrustables are being consumed like Squidward in the Krabby Patty vault. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what it looks like at halftime of an NFL locker room. And it's not actually just like a whole strategy meeting for 15 minutes, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe the real story here is it's the Uncrustables that are providing the second half adjustments because they got more energy. I don't know what it is. But, David, when it comes to Sunday's matchup with the Falcons and the Bucks, feels like a lot is on the line just simply for what's going to happen to the future of the NFC South because a win for the Falcons creates a pretty massive gap for whether it is going to be Tampa Bay or whether it's going to be New Orleans to try to win this division. How does Baker attack this Falcons defense without Mike Evans and without Chris Godwin?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily on Baker to attack. Speaking on Baker, I think for him, the best thing to do is not try to force anything. Live the play, the next play, check it down if you need to. Don't try to force any downfield shot. I think the best way for Tampa Bay to attack, not just the Falcons, but any defense going forward, is going to be through their rushing attack. Mm-hmm. If anybody saw their game against New Orleans a couple of weeks ago, they ran the ball all over that Saints team in New Orleans. And they have three legitimate rushing threats with Rashad White, and then they have Sean Tucker, and then they have Bucky Irving, who is questionable to play, but the Bucks are leaning towards him playing with a toe injury. And so when you have three really good running backs, I think you have a chance to truly establish a ground attack that forces a defense to lean a little bit forward, and then you can probably hit them with some play action and go over their heads. And that's when it doesn't really matter who you have at receiver, because you have a defense that's too worried about the running game. So that's probably my game plan. Now, the buzzword throughout One Buck Place this week has been creative. That's it. Everybody knows Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator, built an offense that was totally tailored to getting Mike Evans and Chris Godwin the football.
Sure.
And now that they're not here, he's having to be creative in order to find ways to get Sterling Shepard and Jalen McMillan, the rookie, and Trey Palmer, a second-year receiver, the football. And so we'll see how creative they really get. Obviously, you can't run trick plays for an entire NFL game, but I do expect the Bucks to come out and hit some stuff that are totally off tendency that will work, or it won't, you know, simply put.
The you know, the league hasn't seen the triple option in a while. I don't know if Baker could be the one to roll out there with it, but it's interesting. You say that creative, and it makes me think, uh-oh, like what kind of trick plays are we going to see getting pulled out with an offensive lineman or whatever might be the case. But it's certainly things are stacked against Baker just from that standpoint, just because, I mean, losing Mike Evans or Chris Godwin is bad enough, but both of them feels like a really tough situation. But talking with David Shealy of WTSP 10 Tampa Bay on the waitfor.com hotline, David, we remember what happened this last time these two teams got together. You know, pretty improbable win for the Falcons, the way that they were able to pull that one out in overtime with Kadarius Hodge. But outside of the receivers who are going to be missing, how do you see this matchup being different just based on what Tampa learned from this last time?
Well, Tampa's going to look a little bit different on offense and defense. So what they're missing on offense is obvious when you don't have Mike Evans or Chris Godwin. But defensively, they are getting back the highest-paid safety in the league, Antoine Winfield Jr. He did not play on Thursday night. But there's going to be two defenders that they will not have. Jamel Dean, their starting cornerback, he's not going to be able to play. He's on short-term IR right now. And also the former Georgia Bulldog, Go Dogs, Tyke Smith, he led Tampa Bay in tackles on that Thursday night with 11. He is out with a concussion this week. So you have two guys that you're that are typically starting that you won't have in the secondary, but you do have Antoine Winfield Jr., who was an All-Pro last year. So, that kind of evens out maybe. But the biggest concern really needs to be at cornerback, because you have Zion McCollum, who is now your number one corner. He's going to be on Drake London. To me, that's a bit of a mismatch, especially because we know Drake London, especially on those short routes, really, he can win those one-on-one battles, and Zion McCollum struggles with those one-on-one battles at times. Sometimes he just completely falls for a double move and blows his assignment. And on the other side, whoever's going to be guarding Mooney or Ray-Ray, it's either going to be Christian Izian, who was an undrafted rookie last year, or it's going to be Tyreek Funderburk, who was an undrafted rookie this year. So that's my concern defensively for Tampa Bay. And then, of course, on offense, if they get down, a lot of pressure is going to be put on them. Atlanta's game plan should very clearly and obviously be make Tampa Bay one-dimensional and make them have to beat you with their wide receivers.
Yeah, I guess kind of piggybacking off that thought, like, do you see a situation in which, with this last game being a 36-30 kind of finish, do you think Tampa Bay can hang with a high-scoring type of game, or do you think they need to keep this pretty low-scoring?
Yeah, it's going to have to be a low-scoring and dirty type of football game, dare I say boring type of football game, because sure. We know how football fans are these days. If the final score is in 45-42, they get upset.
Yeah.
So I really think if Tampa Bay is going to win this game, they're going to have to win it like 14-10. It's going to have to be one of those type of games. And to be honest, that defense needs one of those type of games. They've given up 500 yards twice in the last three contests. And, of course, one of those was on Thursday night against the Falcons. They just gave up 500-plus to the Ravens on Monday night. So that defense needs a game that gets people saying, okay, cool, like everything's fine, don't hit the panic button yet. Because Todd Bowles, the head coach, he's a defensive-minded guy. He's the defensive play caller.
Sure.
And you're telling me with an all-pro at safety, another pro bowler, and possibly future Hall of Famer, a linebacker in Levante David, they have first and second-round picks in the trenches, you're telling me they're giving up 500 yards? That's a problem.
Yeah. David, what's your confidence level? What have you seen lately out of the offensive line? Because it feels like that's going to be a point for Atlanta, who, look, all they've heard all week and all the media feels like has been discussing is pass rush has not been there for the Falcons this year. And so it feels like there is a point to be proven this week. But how likely do you think that's going to happen given the way that Tampa's offensive line has played as of late?
Yeah, the offensive line had some injury issues earlier in the season. They didn't have their right tackle, Luke Getteke, for a few weeks. They were able to get him back. They didn't have center Graham Barton, their first-round pick this year. He missed the game. But as of now, it looks like everybody's good. Everybody's going to be able to play. And they don't give up a lot of sacks when they're fully healthy. The offensive line is actually pretty good. That is not an area of concern down here in Tampa Bay. I don't foresee Atlanta having one of those 5-6 sack type of days. They might be able to get a couple of coverage sacks because, again, you're talking about wide receivers who are not Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And so if Tampa Bay wants to call one of those plays with these long developing routes, it might lead to a coverage sack because Atlanta has it so well bracketed and covered that Baker has no clue where to go. Sometimes he refuses to check it down, which has been his downfall, and then he'll end up taking a sack. That's how I kind of foresee Atlanta maybe getting one or two sacks.
All right, creamsicle uniforms coming out on Sunday for the Bucs. I feel like if you were to put up the creamsicle uniforms versus Atlanta's throwbacks with the red hats, you've got two of the best throwback uniforms in the league. Maybe you could throw the Broncos throwbacks amongst that conversation as well. Are you in favor of the creamsicle? You like those, or is that not really your thing?
They look good. Here's the problem, and some fans down here are kind of split.
Okay.
They believe the jerseys are cursed.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They believe the jerseys are cursed. Get this. Tampa Bay, in the history of wearing the creamsicle, right, as either their main uniform or their throwback uniform, they have like 100-odd wins and like 200-plus losses in that uniform. And primarily as a throwback, when they brought him back in 2009, they beat the Packers in 09, but then they lost to Carolina, they lost to Atlanta, and they lost to New Orleans in the following 3 years during their creamsicle games. They decided to bring the creamsicle back last year. They got blasted by the Lions, and now here they are bringing him back again against Atlanta. So the history in the creamsicles and the record in the creamsicles is not good. The players, they don't believe in any curse. They're like, ah, you know, whatever. And if it was up to them, they would be wearing these more than once a year, but you only get one creamsicle game a year because fans already have an issue with it because they feel like if we're putting them on, we're going to look good, but we're going to play bad.
That's the breaking news of the day from David Shealy, is that the creamsicle uniforms could be cursed, and hey, maybe that'll help the Falcons out on Sunday. I don't know, for whatever reason, David, Josh Freeman is the person that comes to my mind when I think of the creamsicle uniforms being brought back, which is just like, that maybe that fits the creamsicle pretty perfectly, because not a great memory for a lot of Tampa Bay fans to think of Josh Freeman. But I just remember when they brought them back, whatever, maybe it was 09 or just around that era, that he was so terrible for them and a part of that. But that's interesting. I had no idea there was so much negative history attached to the jerseys, and then they bring them out for an NFC South matchup. That's one to keep an eye on. That is David Shealy, WTSP 10 Tampa Bay. David, appreciate you giving us some of your time on the Saturday, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it as always, man. Good to hear from you.
All right, when we get back, going to do a college football catch-up. No dogs going on today. Next week, Georgia-Florida. But there's still some interesting matchups going on and some yet to be played. We'll talk about it next right here on the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 98.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you live in the Kia Studios. It's been a great day of college football. Well, let me add a caveat to that. It's been a day of college football. Are we kind of due one of these weeks? I mean, is it realistic to expect that, hey, with what we've had for, you can go back 2 weeks, last 2 weeks for sure, and go back 3 weeks even, and we've just had, felt like, great game after great game for the last couple of weeks. I don't want to be too prisoner of the moment to say that we're kind of getting a flop so far this week, but, you know, it happens in college football. It feels like week two of the college football season is often one in which it's like, oh, you know, I was really excited for everything to get started, and then week one was so incredible, and week two we're like, all right, everyone's playing Chuck E. Cheese University and that sort of thing. So it gets a bit confusing. This week is one where, if it told you anything, College game day went to Indiana, because 13th-ranked Indiana was taking on Washington. I believe it was only the second time ever that College game day had gone to Bloomington, Indiana. And it was an interesting choice, because it, to me, kind of fueled a potential possibility, something that's been discussed for the last, let's go, 5 years, but has become louder and louder and louder every year, and everyone has a really strong opinion about it when it comes to the world of college football, has been College game day and what they've done with Lee Corso, and the fact that everyone loves the old ball coach, but we all have witnessed the decline in his health and his ability to be an active member of that show. Obviously, this season, you've got some health issues that have popped up for Lee Corso, so he had kind of been away for a little while. And then, you know, the return was a bit of a, like, barely able to read off a script, and it's become kind of an awkward struggle for a lot of people who are like, hey, we need to hang this one up. It's hurtful to watch, but at the same time, hey, if he loves doing this, we don't want to deny him that opportunity because he's been a legend for so long. Today felt like potentially, if they're not going to end things at the end of the year, that today was that opportunity to give a kind of a special send-off. Because for a lot of people, if you don't know, Lee Corso, head college football coach for the Hoosiers, from right there in, I want to say it was like mid-70s, maybe early 70s, into the 80s, but a long stretch of time that Lee Corso was the head coach at Indiana. And this show, this College Game Day they did today, was a lot about doing a bit of an homage to head coach Lee Corso. The man was wearing his sweater. They talked to him about just different moments from when he coached the team. All of this just felt like a really special way to remember Lee Corso while he's still with us and still able to interact and that sort of thing. But a potential opportunity for them to kind of turn the tables and move on and kind of prevent what has become a bit of an uncomfortable and awkward situation for a lot of fans who love Lee Corso, but just know that everybody's time comes when they're not able to kind of keep up. And so that sort of thing is just interesting. Something to keep an observation of, as I thought it was really nice what College Game Day has done. And I'm one of those people who thinks what Pat McAfee has brought to the show is really entertaining and really fun. And he's a guy who can kind of carry on the crazy kookiness that Lee Corso did for so many years. Even today, I was literally feeding ribs to Nick Saban and did like a little choo-choo little thing to him. And it's just, I don't know, it's weird, it's wacky. I think it's entertaining. Maybe not, it's not everybody's cup of tea. But I feel like that was probably the case for a long time for a lot of people when it came to Lee Corso. However, when it comes to the games themselves, I want to do a little bit of a college football catch-up. I want to start with, because I want to give plenty of love to what happened Wednesday night, could not believe, over at Fifth Third Bank Stadium. Kennesaw State, a team that, with head coach Brian Bohannon, just look, they knew it was going to be a tough task making the transition from FCS to FBS football. I was at Georgia State when they made that transition, and it was pretty much just as brutal. You know, you got a relatively new football team, but then trying to make that jump into the FBS, you're playing tougher competition, you're behind when it comes to recruiting, all of those sorts of things happen. But to see Kennesaw State winless so far this season, host Liberty, who was undefeated, and the Owls be able to pull off the win, 27-24, absolutely insane. So much fun. It's part of the reason why we love college football, is because those sorts of things can happen. And it feels like, you know, on a lot of different levels of sport, you don't often see that level of improbability happen and play out on what is often a week-by-week basis. You know, it's not quite I get Vanderbilt and Alabama in the same conference, and so it shouldn't be on the same type of level, but we know the history of those two teams, and so when we witnessed that just a couple of weeks ago, like, that was just as insane. It's why we love the sport, is because it's the whole, you know, they talk about any given Sunday, but any given Saturday when it comes to college football. And for this past week, it was any given Wednesday, because now, you know, Kennesaw State last week played a game on Tuesday, this week on Wednesday, and gets the improbable win. So I wanted to give the Owls a shout-out, because that's a huge one. Otherwise, when it comes to matchups that we've seen today, a bit of a disappointing showing. I think the one in the early slate of games that has clearly stood out is what Ohio State, number four Ohio State, did against Nebraska. Of course, you know, with that type of situation, you got a freshman quarterback, Dylan Raiola, for Nebraska, who Nebraska is just trying to climb back in the national conversation. But to keep it competitive with Ohio State for as long as they did, but ultimately the Buckeyes getting the win, 21-17. That was an interesting one to watch. I mentioned earlier, you know, the College Game Day going to Indiana today, as 13th-ranked Indiana was hosting Washington. That ended up not being near the close type of game that it maybe would have been a year ago. That, you know, Washington's obviously a very different program right now. But Indiana, the Hoosiers, getting the win, 31-17. An SEC matchup, which it doesn't matter how long into this SEC season we've been. Whenever I see an Oklahoma game or a Texas game and it's an SEC matchup, still feels really weird to say. But 18th-ranked Ole Miss, after their disappointment, which they seem to always do, they come back today, get the win over Oklahoma, 26-14. Some games going on right now, not nearly as competitive as you'd like to see. Number one, Oregon against number 20, Illinois. The Ducks are up on Illinois 35-3 in the third quarter right now, so that one not really turning into too much of a game. The one that I had mentioned earlier, hey, there might be something here because of the way that the Crimson Tide had played early, is now, no, it's not headed in that direction, as Alabama up 20-0 on Missouri. However, Brady Cook, who came into this game doubtful, obviously wanted to play because it's a big game, tried to give it a good run, apparently re-injured that ankle. Actually, they just showed him on the TV. He's in street clothes right now. And so you have to imagine that's pretty frustrating, as the Tigers defense was keeping them in this game. And then Drew Pine, the Tigers backup, he's playing like a lot of backups that we've seen in the SEC this year. Comes in, first pass that he threw was an interception, and they just haven't really been able to move the ball without Brady Cook. So, you know, pretty frustrating stuff, because I, for one, would love to see a scenario where Alabama loses three football games in the regular season and is completely out of the college football playoff conversation, because part of what's been frustrating is, in this new landscape of a 12-team playoff, Alabama with two losses, but because they're a powerhouse of the past, still in the conversation. And I'm like, I just don't know. Like, obviously, the Georgia-Bama game kind of gets set aside as, like, that's the reason why Alabama will be in the conversation. But you, part of what you liked in years past of college football was like, oh, man, if someone is able to get to Bama twice in the same season, they're done. They're done for. They're out of this thing. And that's just not the case this year. It's a completely different landscape, and it's interesting as we all try to acclimate with things. Another matchup going on that is wild to say that this is a ranked team on ranked team, but 5th-ranked Texas at 25th-ranked Vanderbilt. The Longhorns are up 21-10 on the Commodores. Doesn't seem like the Commodore is going to have the same ability to shock Texas as they did with Alabama. And, of course, Texas coming off the loss to Georgia last week. So I'm sure there's a level of, hey, we want to get back in this thing. We want to prove that we deserve to be where we're at in the top five. All of those sorts of things come into play. I'm very curious to see Penn State at Wisconsin tonight. That's a 7:30 kickoff. Penn State's just been quietly, like, twiddling their thumbs, doing the whole, like, hey, we're around and we're just good enough and we keep winning games that we get put in the, you know, top five, you know, top three type situation. Very interesting to see if Wisconsin can challenge them or if Penn State keeps rolling and keeps kind of quietly being under discussed and stays where they're at. And then the other one, as I mentioned earlier, just an hour away from 8th ranked LSU going to 14th ranked Texas A&M. That'll be an interesting one as those two teams, a couple of teams that want to be in the college football playoff at the end of the year, and it feels like this will be a part of their trajectory. One's going to be in, and you have to imagine the loser of this one would be out of that conversation. No Georgia this week. I made a really dumb mistake on my sports flashes yesterday, and just being in the flow of Georgia playing every week, I had it in my head. I was like, oh, yeah, Georgia, Florida, 3:30. I already saw it. I saw it in my calendar. Next week, dogs off this week. And so that'll be something to keep an eye on is, you know, Florida, not the same team, obviously. They should be pushed over, but it's still fun rivalry in Jacksonville that we'll get to see next week. When we come back, going to have some fun with a bit of a producer segment right here on the Dopey Millennial Show, about 5 minutes away from that. It's the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.